Tony, Black Widow, and Loki.
All of your friends from here to infinity. Sam's obsessed.
And Kaylee's the best.
MCU and me.
Hey, I'm Sayer, and I love Marvel.
And I'm Kaylee, and I love someone who loves Marvel.
And we're watching through the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe, or MCU, in release order.
There's another order.
For Kaylee's first time.
And Sayer's 85th.
Welcome to MCU.
And me! Okay, we got it.
In this episode, we're talking about 2017's Spider-Man Homecoming. And here's your spoiler warning.
Talk about Meet the Parents! That was so good! I'm nervous to rave about this one because I feel like you and our listeners who know how much you like Spider-Man are going to think that I'm playing this up, but I really liked it. I loved it. Oh, I should do my summary. I should do my summary first. So, 8 years prior to the time that this film takes place was the Avengers first battle in New York City against the alien slugs. And some of the alien slugs ended up in the rubble of the disaster, and construction workers tasked with cleaning up the place found these little egg orb.
Alien tech.
Okay, thanks. I don't have to describe it. And they steal them and then use them to create, over the next 8 years, a bunch of super high-powered weapons. The leader of this group of weapons dealers is Michael Keaton, but what's his villain name?
Adrian Toomes.
Did they ever say that?
Like, once.
Wow.
I was actually listening for it this time, and I think they say his full name maybe once.
Yep, did not know that. Adrian Toomes. Well, he has a bird suit. Like a falcony, but he's not a falcon.
No.
Crow.
He's called the vulture,
okay. He's got a bird suit, strikingly similar to Birdman. And Peter Parker has returned from Berlin, his grand adventure with the Avengers during Civil War. And he's returned to Queens, and he's back in high school, and waiting for a phone call from Tony and Happy, and meanwhile solving little crimes around his neighborhood, blah, blah, blah. He's got a crush on a girl at a school. Turns out her dad is Adrian, and that was a great turn. I did not see that coming at all.
Yeah,
that was a really good deke. Yeah, I mean, like, so much happens, but Peter Parker, as Spider-Man, has to face off against Vulture several times throughout the film, and he keeps getting reprimanded by Tony and Happy for, you know, getting his nose and things and interfering and causing actually more damage. But by the end, after and he gets his suit taken away. Tony takes away his suit and says, if he's nothing without his suit, then he shouldn't have it. And then Peter, without his suit, he has to use his original homemade tech, goes head-to-head against the Vulture while he's trying to take down Tony's plane to steal all of Tony's weapons, and they crash the plane in what looks like Coney Island on the beach, and Peter Parker ends up saving Adrian's life, and Adrian goes to prison. Tony and Happy try and lure Peter Parker to the Avengers with a new suit and a big press conference, and Peter Parker says no, he wants to go back to his high school. Lots of other stuff happens. That was really fun. I really liked it.
Yeah.
It gave me such Tobey Maguire Spider-Man vibes. I remember when I saw that film when I was like a tween, I think. I saw it, fun fact, on the same day that I saw Star Wars The Phantom Menace.
Whoa.
I did a double feature day.
That's a heavy formative movie day.
Sure is, yeah. I can't remember which one we saw first. I went with a few friends. And we spent all day at the movie theater, obviously. That's the only time I've ever done that, seen two movies in one day. But that just stands out to me because I loved this film so much. And my younger brother loved it too. So we got it on VHS or DVD, I can't remember, and watched it a bunch.
Mm.
And this captures the vibe of that so much. I don't think I've seen that Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, though, in probably 2 decades. I don't even remember when it came out. But
2002.
But what I remember about it, the spirit of the film, I feel like is kind of similar in this one. And I really appreciate that. It's kind of, it's so lighthearted. And a really fun aspect of Spider-Man is how he's constantly talking to himself.
Mm.
And I know that's part of the comic books, that he has, like, his thoughts are kind of verbalized in the comic books.
And he's a very chatty hero, too.
Mm-hmm. It's a fun aspect to explore of Spider-Man, that he's so witty and, but not cynical.
Yeah.
Or he's not even witty. He's just commenting on everything and has something to say about everything.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that his suit talks to him. And is that just a Tony Stark invention? Like, is that in the original comics in any way?
No. Oh. That's only Tony's suit. And it makes sense because Tony makes this suit. He has a Jarvis. He has a Friday character. So he gives one to Peter as well.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not in the comics. But it is a neat storytelling device in that it means that we can have all these big adventures where Peter goes and tracks down the bad guys and he actually has somebody to talk to. So it's not just a bunch of action silently. Or him just constantly talking to himself, which would get old and kind of weird.
Yeah, and in that same vein, I thought it was interesting that Ned knows about him.
Mm.
Because I don't think that in the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, that there's an aspect of like a friend who knows about him, is there?
No.
So that was great. I thought it was great too that it's introduced so quickly that the first time he comes home... Ned's sitting there on his bed. He's so cute. I love Ned.
Yeah, he's so fantastic.
And the fact that he knows about it, it gives Peter kind of like angst to play against, you know, like, and he's got all these questions about it. And, you know, so there's a lot of exposition that can happen because he has someone to play off of.
Yeah.
And then it's also relatable in like, he still has to go to high school and go to Spanish class and go to all his classes all day and, you know, do chemistry with teachers who don't care. And that was a really great addition.
Mm-hmm. Actually, speaking of Ned knowing his secret, we were having a conversation the other day where you brought up something really interesting about these films and alter egos.
Yeah, the other day we were just discussing different superheroes, and I articulated for the first time for myself, but also to you, that I was confused about how so far in the Marvel Universe, the characters, the superheroes don't really have alter egos. Well, they have alter egos, but they don't have aliases.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows that Tony Stark is Iron Man.
Yeah.
People know that Steve Rogers is Captain America. I mean, Thor's just always Thor. He's just stronger with his hammer, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, and they show their faces. By and large, so far the characters that we've met don't tend to be precious about people knowing their you know, real life identity. Meanwhile, Batman and Superman and Spider-Man, I brought up those three as superheroes I was more familiar with, that had strong secret identities that they protect.
Yeah.
And I didn't really have much to say about it other than I thought it was interesting that so far we've met a bunch of superheroes who kind of just exist in plain sight and people know their secret identities and people deify these Avengers, right? But they know who they are. They're not, they can't just walk around and be undercover.
Yeah.
But yet now Peter Parker can be. Only a couple people know. I thought it was great at the end when Aunt May found out.
Yeah. I'm really glad that you brought that point up because I'd also never really thought about that. I had just taken these films as what they were and not thought about, what about their secret identities? But it is such an intrinsic part of what makes the stakes in so many of these comic book stories so intense. It's not just that they're trying to defeat the bad guy. It's also they want to protect their loved ones, their own life. They have this secret identity that they need to protect at all costs. Otherwise, their battles are going to bleed into their ordinary everyday life as well. So it was great timing that you brought it up because this film was coming up and I thought, great, this is the first film where we actually have drama that is driven by Peter trying to keep the secret.
Yeah. And you're so right that there is drama inherent in just he can't give up his secret identity.
Mm-hmm.
But why can't he? Because he could still keep being Spider-Man.
Absolutely. And he does have Tony as an example where Tony in that press conference at the end of the first film said, I am Iron Man, and he's continued to successfully be Iron Man. I think for Peter, there is an element of it would drastically change his life in uncomfortable ways with his relationships with his school members, how his life worked. Plus, they have a little bit of an acknowledgement of it that I really appreciate. When Ned first finds out and he's freaking out and he's like, oh my God, May doesn't know. And Peter says, no, of course she doesn't know, because if she knew, she wouldn't let me continue to do this.
Yeah.
And also with everything that's happened with her lately, referencing Uncle Ben has recently died in this storyline.
Oh, okay.
So Peter's like, if May thinks that I'm out there running around looking for conflict, putting myself in danger after her husband just died,
yeah,
that's a terrible thing to do to her. So right. I like that little acknowledgement that they put in. Also that they just subtly mention Uncle Ben, because I do really appreciate in this and in Civil War, we don't have any of his origin story.
Mm-hmm.
It's just alluded to.
Because he's already been bitten.
Yeah, we already know. We all know how Spider-Man came to be Spider-Man. We had two separate franchises to explain it to us. So by now, we don't need to see that again. Let's just get straight into the action. And that's what I appreciate about, right from the get-go, what they've done with this character. They just launch right into, he's an active, relatively successful Spider-Man already, still learning the ropes, very much so, but we don't have to hash out his beginnings. But yeah, I'd never really thought about the secret identity thing before, and it's a really good point. And I like it as a motivation in this film. It really adds real stakes, but also a ton of play.
Yeah. And I guess he also can't, because he's still a minor, he can't let people know what he's doing because they'll stop him from doing it because they just think that it's too dangerous, like you were saying about Aunt May. They might try and stop him, just like Tony does, too. Like, Tony tries to rein him in. It kind of makes me think about, like, you know, people just inherently tend to not trust young people just because they're young.
Yeah.
I love seeing Peter Parker as this next generation. Like, we have all these other superheroes who, like, sorry, but they're all aging,
yeah,
you know, and not that they can't still be like kick-ass superheroes, but seeing Peter Parker, who's apparently 15, and it makes me just think about like what resources should be given to people who are coming up, or like, you know, I don't want to extrapolate too much, but like student debt forgiveness, you know, it's like boomers are like, well, I had to work hard to get where I am. And it's like, yeah, but do you know how much your school cost compared to what job you were able to get as soon as you were out of school? Like, help someone out.
Well, I had to pay the penance, so do they. All you're going to do is have them inherit the same problems that you have right now.
But just compounded.
Exactly.
Yeah, like look at the struggle over minimum wage, too. It's like we just can't get out of this cycle of underemployment or poverty because minimum wage hasn't increased with the cost of living.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, blah, blah, blah. Going to get off my soapbox. But yeah, there's such a delightful innocence and an underdog quality to this very, very bright, intelligent kid. I love too that he's like clumsy and awkward. It's not overdone. And they don't try and like dress him super dorky or anything. He's just, you're doing your best. You're trying to make your hair look good, trying to meet all the demands that are put on you, and then have like these special interests, and he can't tell anyone about his extra interests. I also love that like he got swept up. He was taken to Berlin to fight in this like airplane hangar fight and, you know, has this whole adventure. I love the vlog off the top. I thought that was such a good addition. and how excited he is. Like, he doesn't really yet know the stakes. And he's so, like, Team Tony, just because that's who, like, took him under his wing. And it's so sweet. And then he comes back to school and just has to, like, exist going to school. So he's just trying to do his own thing and trying to be patient and, you know, sitting there waiting and, like, being so needy. And I wish that, like, Happy and Tony would have a little bit of sympathy for him in that he's just this kid that they, like, put on a plane, took to Berlin. He's never been anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they just drop him off back at school and say, yeah, thanks a lot. Enjoy the suit.
Well, it's actually interesting that you bring that up because I think there is some generational, not trauma, but generational inheritance and generational burden being given there, because Tony does sweep Peter up into this crazy life. And Tony has lived a golden life since he was born.
Yeah.
In this crazy world of engineering and technology and being a hotshot.
Mm-hmm.
So he brings Peter into that expecting, ah, you'll be fine. And then Peter's like, what was that?
Yeah.
I've never had anything like this before.
And he gets to meet all his heroes.
Exactly. He's brought into this hugely exciting world that Tony has been part of forever. And Tony doesn't realize what he's doing to Peter by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, he's also thrusting this crazy overpowered suit onto Peter.
With no guidance.
With no guidance.
Or like extra training.
Yeah. And so he's giving him this, what could potentially be an amazing tool. But at this point, it's such a crutch that Peter has to lean on because it's something so new and exciting. That's all he wants to cling to. So then the scene when Tony takes it away and Peter goes, I'm nothing without that suit. He's still Spider-Man. He still has all of his powers, but the suit has been so exciting that he can't imagine existing without it. And Tony has put that burden on him as well.
And I want to talk for a second about what his powers are, because I asked you at one point if he's able to make those webs by himself. Like, I don't actually know what being bitten by the radioactive spider did to him. Like, can he cling to the ceiling and walls and stuff by himself? Or is that the suit that helps him do that?
No, so that's him. So when he was bitten by the spider, he was given what's called the proportionate strength of a spider, which who knows what that is, but it gave him super strength.
Okay.
It gave him super quick reflexes, so his spider sense. Just like, you know, when you're trying to hit a bug and it moves before you move. He's given the ability to stick to walls.
Okay.
And he's incredibly athletic. Then, on top of that, Peter is also a bit of a genius. So he invents these web shooters and web fluid to then be more like a spider and web up bad guys and swing through the city.
Okay, that was really funny when he was out in the suburbs and he had no buildings or trees to swing from. I loved that bit. It was such a good bit because whenever you and I are in a city, your eyes naturally just go up. You're looking you're looking at what you can swing off of. It's my favorite thing. I've asked you before, you're looking at how you would swing through these buildings, right? And you're like, yep. But when we're out in the country, you don't have anything to swing from.
No.
Unfortunately, you'd have to jog.
Just got to run straight across that golf course like he does.
That was a great bit.
And then running through all the backyards, Ferris Bueller style.
Yeah, that was great.
But to finish off the powers, so in the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, they did go the route where he organically made the webs that came out of him.
Right.
Which is something that does eventually happen in one of the comic book lines.
Okay.
Where his radioactive mutation wasn't finished and it continued to mutate, which ended up giving him organic webbing.
Mm.
Plus, then eventually it made him grow extra arms.
Oh, geez. Okay.
It was a whole thing. But that film took a real leap, giving us that version of Spider-Man right off the bat. And then on top of all those powers, he's given this suit by Tony that he's able to create all kinds of crazy web combinations and contraptions, which is a super fun nod to the original comics and especially the original cartoon. In that cartoon, he is making web canoes, web backpacks, web outboard motors.
Wow.
Like, he's crafting all kinds of ridiculous things with his webbing.
Mm-hmm.
And he has little gadgets, like a little tracker spider and the webbing from his under his arm that allows him to sort of glide.
Yeah, flying squirrel thing.
So as much as his suit is crazy stark overpowered, mm-hmm. it's a really beautiful way for Marvel to pay homage to the origins of the character, which I just love the detail there. It narratively works because, of course, Tony is going to throw everything he's got on this new prodigy of his, but it also serves as a nice little tribute to this is where he came from.
Yeah, that's awesome. Tom Holland is such a great find. I loved him in Civil War. He was great. Just so easy to watch. So relatable. Like, he's a theater actor. He's so good. They use so many theater actors. I love that.
Billy Elliot.
I know. He's so good. And as much as there was a ton of CG in this film, of course, I actually found it really subtle. Except for the plane. It lost me for a bit, I'm not going to lie, when the reflective plane was flying and he was clinging to the outside of the plane. Of course, he had to do something big to prove that he was worthy of having the suit and the powers and having them pay attention to him. So I understood that, but it just seemed like a bit much. Can we talk about Michael Keaton, though, as a villain? Oh, boy. I was so excited to see him when the movie started.
Yes.
And I was hoping it wasn't just like a quick little nod to he was Batman. Oh, look, there he is. But, I mean, I've been loving the Michael Keaton renaissance of the last like 5 or 6 years. From Birdman to Spotlight, like he's everywhere now, and I'm loving it.
Yeah.
He's such a good villain.
I think he's so sympathetic and understandable, too. He's an everyman. He's a hard worker. He's trying to provide for his family, and he feels downtrodden by the Tony Starks.
Yeah, it's such a good look at class and how that contributes to villains as well. Like, not every villain is like looks like the Jeff Bezos guy from Ant-Man. Not every villain is bald.
Sure.
They're all white guys, though.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. Most of the villains in real life are white men as well.
Hey, you're right. You're right. But what was I going to say? He looks like a dad. He looks like a boomer dad who's like, I had to work hard to get to where I am. Like exactly what we were saying before. But he's become, in a way, what he hates. You know, and he just sees himself as, you know, doing what he needs to do to provide for his family. And yeah, he's been slighted. So he's like, okay to take from what he thinks is the man. And in a way, I'm like, Tony, you gotta come down to earth.
Yeah.
Tony's arrogance and his privileged position. Like, yes, he's also like saved New York City from the alien slugs. He's done a lot of really heroic things, but he's so out of touch.
Yeah.
And he's all about the press conferences and the big grand acts and the building the Avengers Tower and then building the facility upstate. And yes, I know that he has a core sense of morality or something, but he doesn't show that often. And for someone who enjoys living in the public eye and getting applause and having like all those dancers dancing for him at his, you know, reveals, he certainly doesn't connect with the public in any way.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see why people are like, well, you know, you don't really care about us. You just care about getting the publicity. You just care about the money. You just care about your tech. And everyone knows who he is. Whenever Tony's brought up in any of these films, everyone's like, oh, Tony Stark, you know Tony Stark?
Right.
You know, he's become a celebrity. And that's why I think it's important for superheroes to have secret identities in a way.
Right.
Because it's gotten out of hand. Everyone knows, in a way, like, it's kind of like the Jeff Bezos thing. Everyone knows that he could do so much good. And part of me, like, hopes that Jeff Bezos is, like, a secret superhero.
Well, he's like Bruce Wayne. He's crafted this asshole persona as his secret identity so that it distracts from the real good he's actually doing at night.
But, like, his warehouse workers are wearing diapers because they can't go to the bathroom. So, like, please quit being your secret.
He's worked too hard. It's worked too well.
Yeah, we so doubt that you're a superhero that you can now reveal that you are. And please just raise minimum wage to $22.50 and, you know, give everyone paid sick leave and vacation. Oh, my goodness. It's so messed up.
But that's a really good point that you bring up about Tony being really out of touch. And I love the scene where he helps Peter rescue Peter's mess up on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter says, I just wanted to be like you. And Tony says, and I wanted you to be better.
Mm.
I think it's such a perfect encapsulation of Tony's guilt of everything he's done in the past and the showmanship that he has let himself buy into. So Peter felt like he had to go to the boat and break up the deal that was happening
mm-hmm.
in a very showmanship kind of way. He swoops in with a bunch of taglines and he's being quippy. He's not being subtle about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas secretly, Tony has actually called the FBI to break up that deal and Peter messes it up. So Tony is like, I am actually doing the secret behind the scenes work that people don't see Iron Man swooping in to fix. It's not flashy, but I want to try and do this the right way. And I hoped you wouldn't follow in my footsteps of just being a showboater. I think since Civil War, there has been a shift in Tony because of what Peter said to him. So when Tony came to recruit Peter, and they're sitting in his bedroom, and Tony asks, what's your MO? What gets you out of this twin bed in the morning? And Peter says, when you can do the things I can, but you don't, and then the bad things happen, they happen because of you.
Mm.
Which is a brilliant reworking of with great power comes great responsibility. I think that has had huge reverberations in Tony's life. And since then, Tony has been trying to help shepherd Peter into this role of being the hero Peter can be with those words in mind. And so when Peter is going and doing these reckless things that are endangering so many people, Tony's going, no, I wanted you to not make the same mistakes I made. So it's Peter's own words coming back to haunt him, which I think is a really cool thing.
Yeah, it's so relatable at any age. Like, it's not just relatable to, you know, our young selves to be told, you're too young. Wait, don't act, you know, recklessly and stuff. There is wisdom in that,
yeah,
for sure. Like, you don't know everything. Don't think you know everything. But yeah, that like angst of like, but I could do so much and I have so much potential in me. And clearly I was good enough to go to Berlin and do this thing. And now I'm back in school and I have to sit through stupid math class.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved the little nod to the Sokovia Accords when the teacher is talking about it in class.
Yeah.
That was great. It's like, well, I didn't get taught that recent of history. I was like, why are we learning about 100 years ago? Can we talk about it right now?
And when the gym teacher puts on the Captain America video,
so
and he
good.
Says, I don't know, I think this guy's pretty much a war criminal now, but whatever.
Yeah.
These little references to the greater world around this film, it's very clear, it's in the same universe and it's part of the same storyline, but it feels like a little whoop, micro story that's happening outside our purview of the rest of the films.
True. I really like the 8-year overlap
because
last time we saw Spider-Man obviously was Civil War. And it is great. The interweaving of all of this is great and the little nods to things. And even the kids at school are talking about like F Mary Murder. Yeah. It's good. Oh, I loved Zendaya in this too.
Yeah. Really understated. Not used a whole lot, but she's so good in every one of her scenes.
Yeah. But it's clear it's coming. She's coming back. Because Spider-Man's coming back. Was the character of Liz at all in the original comic books? Or, like, Tobey Maguire starts with MJ.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was Mary Jane.
Yeah.
Also, this is just a nod to Mary Jane. But it's
sort
MJ.
Of.
Her name's Michelle.
Yeah, they're being a little creative with it. And it's kind of great. I like that they're messing things up a bit. Liz is a character who does exist in the comics at some point. Peter goes through a lot of girlfriends.
What's the other controversial girlfriend that he had before MJ?
Gwen Stacy.
Okay, and controversial, I only say that because some people are like, who's the real...
His truest love.
His truest love, yeah. And who do you say?
Well, it's tough because Gwen died, so there wasn't a chance to really see where the relationship could go.
Also, they're like 14?
Yeah, they're in high school. But in the comics, Adrian Toomes isn't the dad of anyone Peter dates.
Mm.
So that twist was so good.
Yeah.
The first time I saw this, my heart started pounding getting up to him going to the door. I was like, here it comes, here it comes.
Oh, when you're watching with me right now?
Yeah. Waiting for you to get the reveal.
Uh-huh. Well, because you wonder at first, oh, did he come here to intercept Peter?
Sure.
Oh my goodness, oh, he's the dad. Ah.
And then that car ride,
mm-hmm,
the tension is so good. And he's so good at playing the curious dad, subtly transitioning into, holy shit.
Yeah.
And then the conversation in the car with the gun afterwards.
Oh, we love Michael Keaton.
Love Birdman.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Yeah.
He can't get away from playing a winged character.
Winged. It's true. He's just so versatile, and he just looks like a regular human. He doesn't have like a plastic face.
No, he's very aged, and it shows.
He's pasty. Yeah, he looks great though, because he just looks like a real human.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. Okay, I was listening for the score.
Ah.
Because the Spider-Man theme is quite familiar to me.
Mm-hmm.
Da-na-na-na-na-na. And I noticed that that was infused in the score.
Mm, but well done.
they took it in a different direction, though.
And over the Marvel theme in the beginning, Michael Giacchino has reorchestrated that main theme to put us in mind of Spider-Man immediately, which is a very smart and cool move.
I got goosebumps.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so intense and amazing.
Correct me if I'm wrong. We started off with alien slugs, Michael Keaton cleaning up, Tyne Daly coming in. Then we go into the title card with the Spider-Man thing, right?
Yes.
And I didn't know the title of this film. I didn't know whose movie this was. Mm-hmm. So when that started, I went, ooh, Spider-Man.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I was really excited.
Yeah.
And already I'd seen Michael Keaton and Tyne Daly. So I was like, we're going to have a good time. Please tell me about the score.
Yeah, so Michael Giacchino, back again from Doctor Strange.
Mm-hmm.
I think his work in this is flawless. Top to bottom, he has really thought about the placement of different instruments. He uses pizzicato strings everywhere. Pling, 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 which is very... It puts you in mind of spiders for some reason. I mean...
Web.
Web, strings, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
He had it played by real spiders on real webs.
They made the violins from spider silk.
Yes.
They do make clothes from spider silk these days, and I want some. So his main theme is... Do 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 do, etc. Which is such a great narrative musical theme because for me it makes me think of a pendulum swing like Spider-Man swings. We have the do 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 do. It goes up and then back down. Do 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 do. Goes up a little higher and back down. Do 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 do. And then up higher and then back down again. So it's this constant swinging motion. And then, as you pointed out, only at the very end of the film, when he has wrapped up the final fight and he's webbed up Adrian and he leaves the little note for Happy, we have that. Do 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 do, but instead of just do do, we have do 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 do, which is the same as do 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 do. It's this perfect homage that just
gets you. I heard it, and I'm smart like you.
You're incredibly clever. The other thing that's interesting about this score is that we have two other very clear themes for different characters that we haven't necessarily got in the same pronounced way in other films. Not to say that other films haven't had a softer emotional theme or an intense theme, but we have two other character themes in this film. So
Ned's theme. If someone said, Sayer, please orchestrate this film from Ned's point of view, what would you make it sound like?
It would be more plinks, maybe some oboe? Do-do-do-do. Like kind of a, there would be something technological about it because he's a very tech savvy guy.
I feel like I'm Salieri right now and you're like, write it down, write it down. And you're like, and then the basses come in. Is it done? Is it done? I'm writing. I was writing that whole thing down, but that was great. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, there would be a little clumsiness to it too.
No.
Because
he's not, you would put his hat on the end of all the brass instruments when you're playing them.
Ooh.
The dampened brass.
Hey, see, that is thinking like a good composer.
Yeah, it's like making the spider silk violins.
But so the other two themes that we have. So the vulture has a theme. Dun, 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 dun. I love that he has his own theme, and it comes in almost any time we see him wearing the wings, and it's just very villain music, which in any other film might feel a little heavy-handed, but through Peter's eyes, he is a big bad guy villain. So through the music, Michael Giacchino is giving us a glimpse into Peter's eyes of the situation, of the scale of it and the intensity of it, that there's a big, scary, winged monster guy. This is his theme music.
I like that you keep saying winged like it's in a Shakespearean play.
I don't like the word winged.
The winged villain.
Villain. And so the other theme in the film is a bit of a love theme for whenever Liz and Peter have a scene together. And it's mostly played on a flute. And it's do 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 do, different versions of that. And it happens almost every single time they have a scene together. And again, it puts us in Peter's headspace of, this is what his life is. Whenever Liz is around, it is this floaty, romantic theme. It's just a really smart move by Michael Giacchino, where he's given us a really nuanced score that tells a narrative and doesn't get in the way, but he mimics how Peter views the world and gives us a glimpse into what it's like to be him. I love it. It's so good.
It was a great movie. Really exciting. Great action. Great humor. I see why you like this character so much, too.
Yeah? Why?
Yeah, well, he's an underdog. He's humble. I feel like he still kind of knows his limitations, and his limitations are frustrating him. And then the imposed limitations are also frustrating to him. He wants to break out and just try, you know, not be too much trouble to his aunt. He's still like a caring person. He hasn't gotten all egotistical. And he's not like some live wire who's just like super destructive. Like, he's really trying to do a good job and trying to get better at what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's had a taste of something. And it's not the taste of greatness that is enticing to him. It's a taste of like doing something with his life.
Yeah.
He radiates positivity. And he's also just like trying to get by and like make it through high school. I thought it was sweet. I didn't know it was called Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
And is that kind of a nod to coming back from Berlin? Like, it's the dance, obviously, but like Homecoming.
I think it's a nod of Spider-Man coming back to Marvel.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's a great addition. I'm really excited to see where that goes.
I really like that you touched on his innocence and his desire to, what did you say? It's not that he's had a taste of greatness. It's that he's had a taste of doing something, and he wants to continue trying to do that. The thing that stands out to me about this film, this version of Spider-Man, over the other two that we've had, which were great in their own respect, but what makes this stand out is this Spider-Man isn't reactive. He takes action. He makes the sacrifice. Mm. So in the other films, with Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, they do heroic things, but they are put into a situation where something happens right in front of them. There's a burning building. MJ is kidnapped. They make a mistake, and the villain succeeds in some way, and so they have to go and fix that mistake. They react to something that they couldn't possibly choose to ignore. Every single conflict that Peter gets into in this film, he makes a choice to sacrifice his own personal life. And so much so that he loses out on many opportunities. He goes to the party. He could swoop in and give him and Ned a huge solid by showing up as Spider-Man, mm-hmm. but he sees the explosion. He's like, what's that?
Mm-hmm.
In DC, Liz shows up in a bathing suit going down to the pool.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably one of Peter's dreams, but he goes to track down the guys that he put a tracker on.
Mm-hmm.
Then at the dance, he's given an out. Adrian says, forget about this. We're cool as long as you never do anything about this.
Mm-hmm.
But he walks in and says, I'm sorry, I gotta go.
Yeah. And he's doing it even without the blessing of Tony, but for the benefit of Tony.
Absolutely. That's a really good point. Tony is telling him, don't do these things. And so doing these things could damage Peter's relationship with Tony, but he decides to do it anyway because he thinks it's the right thing to do.
Mm. And he never gets to take credit for it. You know, like he never, as Peter, gets to take credit for it.
Exactly.
So Liz just gets to think that he abandoned her at the dance or left the party early.
Yeah.
Or didn't show up in DC. And that's part of the like struggle too of having a secret identity is not being able to say, I wish I could have been here, but I was actually saving everyone. I saved you from the elevator falling.
Yeah. That happens in the comics all the time. Peter's personal life suffers so much. Mm. He breaks so many people's hearts. He lets so many people down. He loses so many jobs because he makes the choice to be a hero as Spider-Man anonymously
mm-hmm.
instead of making his personal life better. And this film does that perfectly.
Mm.
You said it so right. He is a proactive Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who the character is. That's what he means when he says, when you can do the things I can, but you don't, and then the bad things happen, they happen because of you.
Mm-hmm.
With great power comes great responsibility. You have this power, it's your responsibility to use it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I love about the character in general. And I'm so happy that they honor that in this film.
Mm-hmm. That was really well done. I could tell you were excited about it today.
I thought I hadn't been giving off any vibes.
Well, the fact that you asked, hey, you want to do another podcast episode tonight? You want to do another Marvel film? Yeah, I could tell that you were excited about it, but you thought you were being cool?
Yeah, I thought I was being pretty chill.
Now, see, I don't know if now that I know what the film is, if it's like revisionist history.
Oh, sure.
But yes, I could tell you were excited.
Hmm.
And what were you thinking? What were you feeling inside? You were full to bursting.
I was very excited to introduce this Spider-Man fully to you because he represents so much of what I love about the character in mm-hmm. general. And it's honestly been a little while since I'd seen this one. So I was just really excited to watch it again.
This would be a rewatch for me for sure.
It stands on its own pretty well.
Yeah. It's very vulnerable to show someone something that you love.
Hmm.
And how so far has this experience been for you?
It is a vulnerable thing, especially something that is so much of who my identity is and something I care so deeply about. And particularly now that we've gotten to this film, really getting into who Spider-Man is, this was a big one for me. Not because this is my favorite film of all time, but because it's a character that means so much to me. So I was really excited to talk about this one. Particularly because early on in this, I think it was in the Captain America episode, the first one, when we were talking about, you asked me who would I want to be.
And I said you weren't Spider-Man.
Yeah, you said I wasn't a Peter Parker type. And you thought it was interesting that I thought of myself as a Peter Parker type. And not to say that I was offended or thought that you were wrong, but just in the couple things that we had talked about in that episode, it just perked up my ears going, Maybe we think about the character in a different way. And so talking about it afterwards, it became clear, at least to me, from what you told me, mm-hmm. Peter Parker was very much just the underdog loser character he is, stereotypically, pre-Spider-Man. And that's all the character was. Whereas me, of course, being as obsessed as I am, there's that element. Then there's the growth of he becomes Spider-Man. He struggles with, do I use this for my own personal gain? Do I use this for the greater good? Then he grows even more. He becomes Professor Parker. He he becomes a scientist and inventor. He has all of these different shades to him. So, of course, I'm encapsulating all of that into who I see Peter Parker as. Mm-hmm. And this is a long-winded explanation of it. But it was just a really interesting conversation that we had about a character that I identify with so strongly that you didn't see how I meshed with that character.
Well, it was more just I thought that you saw yourself as an underdog slash like lower status. Because all through this film, he plays low status, even in that scene with Donald Glover, which was so funny. And I see you as having so much more confidence and agility and fluency and even like negotiating strategies.
The reason that I identify with Peter Parker and Spider-Man so much is because of who he is collectively as both entities individually. As Peter Parker, he definitely starts out an underdog, unsure of himself. And he works his way to some more confidence, but he does continue to live in that realm, more or less. As Spider-Man, he gets to put on this mask and be this outgoing, successful, strong, vibrant character that he never gets to be that person as Peter. So when you say that you see that I have more confidence and I have more self-assuredness than Peter does, it's because in those moments, I'm being Spider-Man, not Peter. I have both sides within me. I don't get to wear a physical mask, but I've learned how to be both sides of that. And particularly in the theater industry, when I need to go to an opening night or put on my business face, I absolutely feel like I am putting on my Spider-Man mask and being that outgoing personality. And then I get to take it off and be my more introverted, unsure Peter Parker self. Mm-hmm. I second guess myself all the time. I second guess what I did while I'm wearing that metaphorical mask. Mm-hmm. I sound like I'm Ben Stein in The Mask. We all wear masks, metaphorically speaking. But that's why I identify with it. It's because I have all these different shades of my personality, and the two sides of Peter and Spider-Man represent that for me.
Then I'm a Peter Parker too.
Totally. Mm-hmm. I think that's what's so relatable about the character in general, is that we all have these moments when we get to feel like we are killing it, mm-hmm. and we're powerful, and we're vibrant. And then other moments when we are so timid, and we feel like we've lost, and we aren't worth being in the situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's no wonder that Spider-Man is one of the most popular comic book characters ever created. Mm-hmm. He's so relatable. And Stan Lee has talked about that quite a bit. Before Spider-Man came along, we really didn't have the down-to-earth underdog hero. We had Captain Americas, who are nothing but confidence and something to aspire to for sure, but they don't necessarily reflect anything in their day-to-day existence that we all feel all the time.
Yeah, I guess Captain America, as you know, Steve Rogers pre-Captain America, has a bit of that underdog thing, like hardworking, wants to really do good, but like doesn't have the capabilities or strength yet. But then post Super Soldier Serum, now he's only ever just Captain America ready at any moment, but Peter Parker still vacillates.
And because, like you've said, he has to keep his secret identity, mm-hmm. so he also has to hang on to that unsuredness to help sell the bit that he's not Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. So he never gets to let go of that. He always has to hang on to who he used to be.
Yeah.
I just love this character so much.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful that Marvel and Disney has given him this treatment.
Yeah.
And what I feel is an accurate representation of what makes the character so good.
Thank you.
thanks so much for listening. Please subscribe and leave us a review. Let us know what you think. And you can follow us at MCU and Me Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. See you next time.